Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, America and around the world. The SRI Label Group, Wildlife Educational Services, and Blog Talk Radio presents Larry and Cheryl Batson discovering our wild world and the music of the SRI Label Group. It's time for animal tracks, wildlife conversation, and great music. Join us and enjoy Larry Batson's Wild World Animal Tracks.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, broadcasting across this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio and our show Animal Tracks every Wednesday night. And tell your friends because you can download it for free after the initial live broadcast. And from the SRI Label Group, here's Cool and the Gang. are not just your big audience on Philly NATV. Love his magical voice. He joins us tonight. You're on Animal Tracks on Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, Chris.
Thank you, Larry. What a way to start out the show. One of the hottest groups ever, and they were just in town at the State Fair.
I heard that. I wish we would have gone. We would have loved that, huh, Cheryl?
I guess not much.
Yeah, we don't get out.
Hey, Mom, Cheryl. I see the boss is on the line, eh?
Yes.
You know, that's one. One knows after 31 years.
31.
Being, 37. Oh, I'm in trouble already. We just got started. I finally figured it out that I am not the boss. I do not call the shots. It's all run by
the monkey.
The monkey. Yeah, basically.
Yeah. It's a guy thing.
Yeah.
Well,
what's going on? What's going on over in your part of the state?
Well, we had a beautiful day today. We were listening to Cool and the Gang, Too Hot, but that wasn't the case here. We had 70-degree weather. So what did Cheryl do today? What did you do today, Cher?
I don't know. I put a new roof up for the Tigers.
Put a new roof up for the Tigers today.
Just for the temporary trees that
want to have. Yeah, we live in the country. We live in the forest, so every once in a while a tree will come down. And this came down at an inappropriate location, so...
How big is your place?
Well, we have totally 20-plus acres, and the amount we use for the animals is probably about 8 or 9 acres. Plus, they let us live here. We do have our home here, and they do give us permission to do that. And it consists of 5 tigers, a couple bears, several alligators that we've rescued, snakes, parrots, African serpent. And not a lick of damn sense either.
I mean, boy.
You know, in your heyday, when you did the evenings at WNEP, I harassed you constantly because I used to listen to WNEP in my bedroom on the second floor of our home in Eagledale.
That was
and
you?
I'd crawl up Chris Connor and request every Jimi Hendrix song that I thought they might play on WNAP until you finally got so you recognized my voice and you knew what I wanted. No, he didn't hang up. He was always pleasant. So, I don't know what you want to hear. Okay, whatever. Click.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that goes back, going back to WNAP and the evening show. That does go back a ways.
A lot of fun, though, huh?
So you were in high school then?
Yeah. In fact, I remember we went and saw Jimmy when he played the State Fair Coliseum May 11th, 1969.
That was a great show.
Did you go?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was there. I wouldn't have missed that.
You remember it
was a great show.
It was a great show. Do you remember the opening act?
Chicago.
Chicago, as he does. Well, I have to tell you, there's a fellow that wrote a book called, his name is Richard Houghton from England, and I got an email one day from him, and one of my Facebook posts, I had some pictures from that show, and he messaged me, he says, hey, I'm doing this book on people that saw Hendrix live, I'd like to interview you for it. So it's supposed to come out in October, and we're kind of excited about that, and he told me, we did make the book.
And that's why you're excited, because you made the book.
Yeah, I'm excited because I got to see my name in print again. You know how it is. Ones that you have to completely be fed all the time.
Fluffed at all times.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a cool night. It was probably one of the most colorful things I'd ever been to, as far as the audience.
Chicago was like, who is this group? And,
yeah.
You know, Larry, I had, I'd been into Karma Records on Broad Ripple Avenue there. I don't know, about a week, 10 days before that. And in their throwaway bin, they had, you know, just really cheap albums that weren't selling, was the double album set of Chicago. It was CTA, Chicago Transit Authority, and Karma wasn't selling any of them, so they had just put them in a low dollar bin. And so I got one and brought it home to my house and put it on, and I went crazy over the thing. And so I started playing I'm a Man, and that was the first cut that we played on the station, but man, they just exploded.
Oh my goodness.
Well, I had heard the reason that they were hired to open for Jimmy was Jimmy was just so enthralled by Terry Kath, the guitar player. He thought Terry Kath was phenomenal. And that's why he wanted to include them in as many concerts as he could as their opening act.
Well,
and
that was great.
Oh my gosh. In fact, I think they were out somewhere and Jimmy came up to Terry and actually told him that. He said, man, I think you're a fantastic guitar player. And it just went on from there. Yeah, but I feel bad about that now because we waited for that album to come out and finally did. And there was already released. We didn't even know it. And you had to bypass Freeform Guitar, though. I listened to that once, I think. Particular track with Terry Kath just on feedback and guitar. Cheryl says, if I can play it, that's not good music.
Sounds like a train wreck.
Oh, my. Well, yeah. You know, every group has bad records, so if you don't give it a shot, you know.
Well, not unless you're the Beatles or Hendrix. Those two, they pretty much kick butt on all of them.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
We're talking to Chris Connor, WNAP. We're going to talk about Rap Race and all that great stuff. From the SRI label group, Gilberto Garcia, Sway, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
¿Quién será la que me quiera a mí? Ay, ¿quién será? ¿Quién será? ¿Quién será la que me dé su amor? ¿Quién será? ¿Quién será? Yo no sé si la podré encontrar. Ay, yo no sé, yo no sé. Yo no sé si volveré a querer. Yo no sé, oh, yo no sé. He querido volver a vivir la pasión y el calor de otro amor. De otro amor que me quiera sentir, que me hiciera feliz como antes. Ay, ¿quién será la que me quiera a mí? Quiera a mí, oye, ¿quién será? ¿Quién será la que me dé su amor? ¿Quién será? ¿Quién será? Y el calor de otro amor que me hiciera sentir, que me hiciera feliz. Ay, ¿quién será la que me quiera a mí? Vamos, ¿quién será? ¿Quién será? ¿Quién será la que me dé su amor? Oye, ¿quién será?
Hi, everyone. This is Shelley Leibowitz, and you're listening to my friends Cheryl and Larry Batson on Animal Tracks here on Blog Talk Radio.
Egberto Garcia, we were, what dance would you call it, Cheryl, we were performing?
I'm not sure. The horns remind me of the mummies.
Here come the mummies. Yeah.
Boy, it's a good thing this isn't television.
I know. Well, you know,
Larry dance would not be a good thing.
Yeah, I did a dancing scene when we did the movie with Bill, and they edited that out pretty darn quick.
You did?
Yeah, I did. In that, it was in Lucifer's, a disco bar there on the north side.
Oh, that's
goodness.
We filmed that movie, and they want me to do a dancing scene with my ex-wife, and it was pathetic. It was pitiful.
Gosh, I would pay money to see it.
Not very much
money, I'll tell you.
It's sitting on a film floor somewhere.
It's where it should be.
Chris, I know you guys got involved with the movie, too. That was quite a bit of a little taste of Hollywood. That was kind of fun.
That was such an interesting experience, just to see, on so many different levels.
Yeah, well, Larry, that's perfect. Interesting on so many different.
Well, you know, remember when was it the Tyndall Armory where we did the wrestling scene and the snakes and the, I think, poor Ron Beal and you guys got beat up by the ox and,
well, you know, Ron Below drew blood on the ox.
Oh, he did.
When he was told to hit him with the crutch, and of course Ronnie did. But they had just gotten one of these old set of crutches, and where the handle goes, where your hand holds onto the crutch, it was attached with a wing nut. And Ronnie hit the ox on top of his head with the wing nut, and it just started bleeding. It was perfect.
Well, we were. Oh yeah, they do. They would cut themselves.
And if it's stick on it, so when it hit again,
it would bust back.
What I loved the best was. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah.
I was going to say what I loved the most was Ronnie got his own credit in the movie, and he was the man with crutch.
I didn't see that. Well, we're shooting that silly stunt with the rattlesnake in the bag and putting it on his head, and he reaches up and grabs that release and plummets to the ground.
Oh, I thought he broke his neck.
Oh, my. Well, I walk up to the ring, throw that snake hook in the ring. I go, well, we're done making movies. It's all over now. That was a lot of fun for a while.
Oh, my.
And then that was so much fun. Oh, it was. I really made it, man, because I was the only one that got halfway decent reviews for my part. And because when we were. Remember Randy Galvin? It was at the Black Curtain Theater.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, well, he was my acting coach. Because they were so worried about my acting skills. So I go to his house today, and they're going to work on my acting skills. And he has me read these lines. And I'm saying, these lines are stupid. Yeah, he said, well, what would you say? And I told him what I would say. And he goes, oh, that's much better. And he's hanging. He's hanging upside down from with a snake wrapped around him, wondering if he's in trouble. What would I say? I said, well, if we bring him down, we won't get paid. And if he's in trouble,
that's not acting.
I just basically rewrote my whole part. And then when the silly thing came out there, I think it was at the Eastview Theater, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Wasn't it out on Pendleton Pike?
I think you're right. Absolutely. So, we did get to ride in cool limousines. That was a lot of fun. But, Hollywood, give it to Bill. But, you know, the man's nuts, you know.
Well, you know, and he's one of the most fun guys around. I love Bill. I just love so much to go and socialize with him and Liz. They're just, Bill's just fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
He was on the show last week, and we laughed pretty hard talking about some of the old adventures. Because we took him on the road one time. We did several sportsman shows. We went up to Utica, New York, and Syracuse, New York, and for about 3 weeks, and he rode up in a monkey truck and crossed the New York Thruway, you know, and Bill's Bill, you know. How can you stand to smell that monkey poop all day? And, you know, the monkeys harassed him the whole time up there. And then when we get up there to do the stunt, We took a python that was just too big. It was about 18-foot python. It probably weighed 150, 175 pounds. It was a monster snake. Should have taken one half. So, you know, the bit was we chain him by his ankles and bring him up off this wrestling mat and about 50 foot up the air, and he'd have that python draped around him and a straitjacket on. Just a normal deal.
Yeah. And everyday deal.
Yeah, just an everyday thing. And
transport.
That snake had wrapped around his neck and completely cut off all of his oxygen. But we didn't realize he's 50 feet above us. And he's spitting and going on. And of course, you know, Bill, I'm thinking, oh, that's just acting. That's him acting. This is phenomenal. Is he going to die? No, I'm just kind of, then I finally realized that. He had a key word. He always said, if I'm really in trouble, I'll say Houdini. That means stop whatever you're doing and help me.
Help me.
The only problem was with that snake wrapped around his neck, he couldn't talk. So I keep spitting and I could see his eyes bugging out.
Oh, my goodness.
Blood vessel in his face burst. And he comes down. God, I almost died up there.
At least he could have taken a Sharpie and a 5x6 card, don't you think?
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah,
he
could have ripped something
out. No, but his hands were
snake, weren't
they? Yeah, it was just a mess. I mean, and we did all those crazy stunts with him. We provided scorpions, tarantulas, rattles, whatever he needed.
Oh my goodness.
The question I would have is what he needed.
Yeah.
Did he need these things?
Well, he's always looking for something, you know, new and amazing to do. And when we came up with the idea of putting his head in a bag with a rattlesnake, he first thought, well, how are we going to do that where I don't die? And I said, I'll just get a rattlesnake that's not that aggressive. Oh, no. No, that's not going to work. So we end up coming up with another scheme. So I couldn't sell him on that concept. Just doing it for real.
A nice rattlesnake. And how do you take interviews for nice rattlesnake?
One boy, oh boy.
On a man's head. Kindness required.
Hey,
oh boy.
I have a serious question because I'm in, this is, I've thought about this ever since I became aware of it, and that is down in Florida, Larry and Cheryl,
yeah.
What are they going to do about all of these pythons that have, you know, the people have taken them out and let them loose, and now they're it's a perfect environment for them, and what's happening down there? I mean, it sounds like it's a pretty serious problem.
Well, it all started with Hurricane Andrews. Now, there were several animal dealers down there that basically had simple, you know, structured buildings where they'd keep the animals they would sell to pet shops and dealers and so forth. So when Hurricane Andrews went through Miami, all these things got let go. You see, there's not only pythons in the Everglades, but there's cobras, African monitor lizards that get 6 and 7 feet long, kind of like miniature Komodo dragons. They have the Rhinus toad, which is a huge toad from South America that's poisonous to small pets. And so it's pretty much a biological. Now, I came up with a solution, Chris. Here's what my concept. And I gave this to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I said, here's what we need to do. Every wild animal that we've ever put a bounty on, that bounty has pretty much solved the problem. Whether it be wolves, mountain lions in areas, and so forth. Mm-hmm. I said, here's what we need to do the same. Now, they've done that for the
five. Stop killing the ones we need.
Yeah, stop killing the things that we really do need. So here's my concept. I said, build a factory on the edge of the Everglades and buy these captured snakes from these individuals and manufacture wallets, purses, belts, clothing out of these python hides, because they're not supposed to be there. So let's make it an economical or
use the revenue to take care of the situation that's wrong.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, Chris
sure.
with it. And once all the snakes have been taken care of and the population's down, which it eventually will be, close the factory and, you know, move on.
What is something else?
I mean, to me, that's the simplest solution. And
well,
the
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea about all the other animals that, you know, you don't think about that. But, oh, my, yeah. I'm taking Florida off my destination list.
They can't drink the water anyway, so what difference does the animal situation make, right?
Well, I used to go down there and get animals from time to time. In fact, I rode a motorcycle down there, and coming home, I had strapped on my motorcycle cobras and rattlesnakes and boxes and lizards and centipedes.
Says that's okay,
I don't know if I broke any laws back then. Scorpions, you name it. Yeah. And I didn't make it quite home. I got to Greensburg, Indiana, the motorcycle. It was only a 400 Honda, so you're not supposed to drive them nonstop at 90 miles an hour.
Is there any animal you haven't had your hands on or you haven't – that you're not personally familiar with, Larry? I mean, all these years, it's hard to imagine – any that you haven't?
I've never worked with mandrills. I've never worked with gorillas. I have worked with chimps and gibbons. There are other great apes. Most of the big cats. Yeah, I've never done nothing much with elephants, though I did have a chance to be around them. I was up at Wild World, and there was a couple. Three elephants guys were trained to take back to the wild for an ABC special. I got a chance to meet them and meet the elephants and stuff. That was kind of, but I didn't really have a chance to work with them. But most of the big cats, except cheetahs, and never worked with snow leopards before, but I've worked with lions and, of course, tigers and
bears.
And there's a funny story, which I'll. We worked with for many years when I would MC the sportsman show. We do one of the biggest in the country. It's Cleveland, Ohio. It's called the American Canadian Sport Travel and Outdoor Show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd MC stage show, and plus I'd do presentations with our animals. Well, one of the acts they have there, besides the knife throwers and the retrieving dogs, was a guy named George Allen, the former wrestler, and Victor the Wrestling Bear. And we do two shows on the weekends. So we'd have to find six guys that would be willing to wrestle this 800-pound brown bear from Switzerland. And then, believe it or not, it wasn't hard to find. I mean, there's guys, you never find a woman. Women are
smart. No, men have way too much testosterone.
Yeah.
Way too much testosterone.
So it was a fantastic, it was a like a, it was almost like a coliseum where we'd run the stage show. And the bear was
huge.
It was huge. It seated about 5,000 people.
Yeah.
And on Saturdays and Sundays, it was pretty much fill up. Well, you had to sign up before. You had to sign a waiver and stuff. So if the bear killed you, that you couldn't sue him or anything.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right.
They had one guy, big biker guy. He's about 6'6", blonde hair. He wanted to wrestle the bear, but you could smell the alcohol on him 10 feet away. So he said, sir, you can't do it. You know, we can't
do drunk.
We don't do drunks. And we'll give you tickets to come back to the show. Just come back through the week and, you know, don't drink and we'll let you wrestle the bear. Well, that wasn't good enough.
No, he would sober up and not come back.
Yeah, that's the problem. He would sober up. It's really stupid.
Yeah.
So during the whole show, and the show was about an hour long, and we got through the knock doors and retrieving dogs. I did a little animal bit, and the bear was last. and we had the three guys wrestle the bear. And of course, they were all pummeled and bloody, and they didn't do very well.
Sit on him.
The bear would sit on him. So after the wrestling was done, after the wrestling was done, George would take the muzzle off the bear because he had to muzzle him, and then give him a baby bottle full of Kool-Aid. He loved his Kool-Aid. The guy was, during the whole show, everybody's act, he was over there screaming on the side. I mean, he was just annoying. And a Cleveland audience is pretty tough. Well, we finished the show, and nobody left. Yeah, nobody left the arena. So finally, George, he just got sick. He said, let him out there. I'd like to leave him wrestle this bear. So I said, sir, we're going to give you the chance to wrestle the bear. Well, these Clevelanders are glad to listen to him for an hour, so they were like going nuts. They were so happy. In fact, they started chanting, Victor, 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 Victor. So he gets up on the mat, and I tell him, I said, well, first of all, I told George, I said, George, you've got to put that muzzle back on that bear. You've got to.
George wasn't into it.
He's scurrying. Well, that wasn't his exact words. He's scurrying. No way. I ain't going to put the muzzle back on him. No, you have to, George. I told the guy he couldn't stand on the mat until the bear was properly muzzled. Of course, he didn't listen to that either. So he finally put the muzzle on the bear. Well, the bear's real name wasn't Victor, it was Sonny. So the guy gets up there in the mat.
The picture's better for
showbiz. Back showbiz. So he gets up there, and of course, the bear, 800 pound bear, has him down.
In a second.
And it's kind of like doggy style. And of course, the Cleveland audience, their sense of humor is a little different. I go, whoa, looks like we're going to have cubs this spring.
Oh, my goodness.
So, George comes up behind the bear. He grabs it by the butt, grabs a big old handful of fur on the rear end of the bear, and he twists it as hard as he can, and he's screaming.
Angry.
He's so mad, he goes, kill him, Sonny, kill him. Well, of course, the only ones that could hear this was me and the guy underneath the bear. So he's like, swim out from that bear. And the audience is just going nuts. I mean, and after the match is over, they pulled Victor off. They kind of scraped the guy off the mat. Cleveland police were ready waiting for him. And I told George, I said, George, what you need is a biker. You need to travel.
Every show.
I said, because I used to warn the performers at Cleveland, I said, you know, if you're doing your thing and you get no response, I said, don't feel bad, because Jesus Christ himself could ride in front of this audience in Cleveland and they could give a crap.
Even the amazing thing was, those men would be back there like, working out, like, you know, bulking up, like they're going to actually take this bear down. And I was always amazed. Oh, my goodness. The male ego is just phenomenal, isn't it?
I'd walk back there and look at them while they're all loose and like, I said, do you really think you have a chance in hell?
What was amazing is Sonny, or the bear, would be having M&Ms in it. He didn't give it to you, you know.
Well, we worked with him in the sports show in Syracuse, New York, one time. They just like being bears. And we'd go in during the day and exercise all the animals because, you know, we traveled in a truck. So the show was closed. We'd walk around with the animals. Well, George was in there, and he'd make some beans and rice for lunch and invited us to have some. So we're sitting there having some beans and rice with George Allen, the wrestler. And I look up, and there's old Sonny. And he's like walking across the show floor, just loose. All the exhibitors, I go, hey, George, I go, there goes your bear. He goes, God damn it. Oh, yeah. So the bear walks into the women's restroom.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
I don't know. In 10 seconds, out comes this woman. Call the game warden. Call the laws. There's a bear in the restroom. Come on, Sonny. Damn it. Supposed to stay in your truck. The Lord have mercy.
Talk about misbehaving.
Oh, my God. We're talking to Chris Connor. We're going to talk at WNBA.
If we get Larry to be quiet for a moment.
I know. I just love to talk about myself, don't
I? You do enjoy it.
there's electric flag on Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Electric Flag on Blog Talk Radio. The SRI Label Group is our underwriter for Wild World Animal Tracks on Blog Talk Radio. The SRI Label Group is for people that love all music. Rock, jazz, blues, country, it's all there. The artists and their classic recordings. Best of ELO, Little Richard Live, Chambers Brothers, Hall & Oates, a catalog of thousands of recordings available for download or just to listen to. Explore an amazing music collection at the best musical site, the SRI Label Group. Check it out today, srirecords.com. Our guest, Chris Cotter. We were going to talk about the WNAP rap race, Cheryl.
Every time I think of the rap race, I can always remember the Doobie Brothers song, Blackwater.
Oh.
I can't think of it when I hear that song. You know?
You know, that was a party. Put it mildly.
Yeah, that was a job.
You wouldn't have thought like that, wouldn't you?
Well, if you think about it, WNAP. I'm sorry?
Did you ride in the rafts?
No, we actually, Cheryl, we pretty much were all actually working at the raft race. We did anything and everything. It was, I was just going to say, it was a huge bunch of responsibilities that had to be undertaken, and we were a small station, essentially. We incorporated a lot of the people from WIBC on that day. They would help us out, but everybody had so many different, it wasn't just that we had a microphone and we would talk about the race, but we were actually doing stuff
at the race.
Manual labor almost. It was tough. It was a big thing to try, and we never anticipated it being as big as it became, even first year out.
Yeah. You took over, Rob.
We thought if we had 100 rafts that first year, it would be a big success. And we had almost 300. And
so
it was
did you
like,
go, oh, no, what did we do? Did you think
that's right?
Well,
we did, except we knew it was a hit, so it was a mix. There was a mixture of emotions about it. Was do we dare try and do this again?
Yeah,
and of course, the next year it went crazy, and before it was over, we had 1,500 to almost 2,000 entries.
And
it was pretty.
You know, there was quite a creative mix of rafts that would come there, the folks that put them together.
It was too much. It was, I mean, just the, that was the most, the people had the most fun, and just watching them, it was great.
It was fun.
And plus the music, there was lots of music.
Oh, yeah.
The days of pure funk and faith band. My goodness.
Well, there's a lot of things I can't really tell you about the raft race.
Well, is it?
Making it a success.
Instructions.
No, he's probably saying that he can't remember, like you know, Dave Davies.
Yeah.
You got to admit, it was a pretty heady experience.
Yes.
So I have to ask you, you know, many times Bill's told me the story of how he got into broadcasting, because originally the family owned the station in Muncie, WERK, and Tom Cochran worked for him. And Bill was just kind of the custodian or the janitor. Tom told him, says, you need to get into the disc jockey world, the broadcasting.
Yeah.
So, you know, Bill said, why? He says, that's how you meet all the girls.
Oh, yes. I remember. But here's what Tom says. Tom says that Bill's dad came to him and said, you got to do something with this boy.
Oh, there you go.
You know, I can see that. I look back on you know.
I bet Bill was a handful, boy.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
He's oh my gosh, I can't even. Even now, still, it's he's kind of slowed down a little.
Bruce Munson and I, Bill wanted us to come out to his not the house where he's living now, but the last house that he had. Was out on out by Eagle Creek, and he said, "Come on out, we'll do some fishing in the pond." And I said, "Fine, that'd be great." So we went out there, and of course, we weren't there 2 minutes, and Munson reels in this, I don't know, probably 8-10 pound catfish, and and they're just biting like crazy. I accused Bill of actually having trained the fish to bite when people would throw a line in. I said, these fish have so much scar tissue on them, I know they just come when you call them.
It's because he fed them.
Yeah, he fed them all. It's like fishing in a barrel. And that's how he liked it. I mean, did you ever go on a fishing trip with him, like to Canada or Minnesota or anything like that?
No, but I talked to him the last time he went up, and I came. I would love to do it. I would love to go with him, but he's, like I say, he's just so unique. But he loves his fishing.
Well, if you catch a big fish, I'll warn you right now, he'll get his picture with it.
Absolutely. As well, he should.
Oh, boy.
And I can't say anything because he's paying all the expenses to the trip. And
that's the way he bought it.
And, yeah, well, that is. I say, go ahead and get your picture with it. Then he got mad at me for releasing one that was fairly good size.
Because he didn't get his picture first.
He didn't get his picture first. He said, well, damn it. Kind of pictures. Bill. So, you know, old Chris Connor, he gets a chance to do it on the radio, and he gets a chance to talk to all the, who is the coolest rock star you ever talked to?
Well, I've got a story about missing one of the coolest opportunities, but actually, you know, I liked and enjoyed quite a bit was Alice Cooper and James Brown.
Mm.
James Brown and I worked together in South Bend for about 3-4 years in a row, and he always treated me real well. And yeah, James Brown, he was quite an interesting character. And
gotcha.
The other story I want to tell you was, I haven't told this story to many people, but there used to be a friend of ours named Ken Cantanella, and he ran Wall Street and the Exchange Go, if you remember, out there in Castleton. And Ken was begging me to go to one of the islands off of Florida. And it was one of these places where there was a total of maybe 5 cabins on the entire island, and that's all there was. And it was a beautiful place. Can't remember the name of it right now, but I couldn't go because I'd already taken my vacation time, and so I couldn't go. But he came back and he told me, he says, it was unbelievable. There was only one other couple on the island, and my kids were playing down on the beach and came up to the cabin, came back to the cabin and said, Dad, you've got to meet this guy. He came up to us while we were on the beach, and he was talking to us, and his kids were with him, blah, blah, blah. And we asked him what he did, and he said that he was a musician. And they said, oh, he says, really? He says, my dad has bands and stuff, and they play at this club in Indianapolis. And so they set up a dinner. The kids set up a dinner where the parents are going to be there and everything. So they go down to the guy's cabin, and it's Paul McCartney.
Oh, there you go.
There
so I missed I missed a chance to go on vacation and be with Paul McCartney.
McCartney. So you're still kicking yourself now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Can you imagine spending a week not having a phone or any way to call anybody and say, hey, I'm down here with Paul McCartney.
You wouldn't believe it, but guess what?
Well, it may be the same spot that Paul was talking about one time. He was down there and he realized a few cabins down from him was Keith Richards.
Oh, there you go.
And they got so they
hung out
there. Yeah. So it was like, yeah.
Those two together, that's a mental image, isn't it?
Well, it would be. And of course, they've known each other forever.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you know, the Stones were the bad boys, the Beatles were the good boys, and they used that up to the max. But you were talking about Alice Cooper. My opinion, WNAP, they did a concert out at the Coliseum. It was a Christmas concert. Spirit was there. Canned Heat.
Yeah.
And Alice Cooper was on the bill. But nobody here was really familiar with him that much. So he comes out and does the Killer album before it was even out. And here we are, it's about 1 o'clock in the morning when he's performing. And he's, you know, done cut his head off with a guillotine, done cut off babies' heads and kicked them into the audience and all this stuff. And we were so bummed.
At the Bible Belt.
Yeah. I mean, we're like, oh, God, that was like warm my ass out. Alice Cooper. And of course, in the album coming out with the boa constrictor on the cover, you know, we couldn't get it quick enough. So it was
well, of course, Larry Herman.
Snakes. And I can remember when I was working in Bloomington, all the college students wanted to buy boa constrictors before the Alice Cooper concert at the convention center. I don't think he showed up. Is that the one he didn't show up at? You went to show?
Yeah, he didn't show. He was stuck in Chicago for snow.
So we had all these idiot college students wanting boa constrictors to go watch Alice Cooper, so I don't know.
I don't remember that it required that boa constrictor.
No, it didn't.
Oh, okay.
Well, he wasn't a druggie. He drank whiskey. And but when he came in for the interview at the station, I found him to be brilliant and plain spoken. I don't mean plain spoken, but I mean well spoken, educated, and knew exactly what his business was and how he was going about it. And then later on, we find out that he lives next door to Barry Goldwater, and he and Barry Goldwater play golf together.
They golf.
Buddies.
It's a thing, yeah. It's a wonder he ended up at the 500 golfing, you know, because he's such a golfer.
And he's good. That's what I.
I think great golfer. Yeah.
He goes out and plays two or three times a week, and basically just plays music when he needs to buy a new pool or a new bag of golf clubs. I'll do a concert now. I need some golf clubs and golf balls. We're talking to Chris Connor on Blog Talk Radio. This is Animal Tracks with Larry and Cheryl Batson. Brought to you by brought to you by Alice Cooper and SRI Label Group.
SRI Jazz is proud to present their newest release, This Is Ray Brown Jr. That's right, Ella Fitzgerald's son continues to entertain audiences with his warm and charming vocals, making this one of the best vocal jazz albums of the year. Here are some sample tracks from the album. Visit our website to hear all of them in their entirety. Just go to srirecords.com or click on the banner in your media player now.
It's wonderful, marvelous, you should care for me. Awful nights, paradise, what I love to see. My baby, when she walks by, all the fellas go, I know why. Simply 'cause that girl's so fine. If she'd ever leave me, I'd lose my mind. She's got the kind of loving, kissing and a hugging. Sure he's mellow, glad that I'm a fella, and I know, 'cause she knocked me off my feet. Have
You've been listening to a few sample tracks from the new album, This Is Ray Brown Jr. You can hear all the songs in their entirety at srirecords.com. Support jazz music today at srirecords.com. Consideration provided by SRI Jazz.
Ray Brown, in fact, I understand he's on tour in Russia right now. He's big, so that's pretty cool. SRI Label Group, our underwriter here on Blog Talk Radio, and our guest, Chris Connor, has been kind enough to give us a little of his time this evening here on a Wednesday night, and I can hear crickets and frogs outside on gorgeous weather. My goodness. Did we lose him?
No, I'm here.
Okay.
I didn't see the light go on.
Well, you know, we're working on that part of this deal. They don't give me a light. And plus, I get to play whatever I want to play. So it's just like I'm either the best or the worst program director on radio. I can't decide which. It was quite an undertaking.
Most program directors can't figure that out either.
It's on track then.
Well, I guess I am on track. I didn't even think of it that way.
Got that going for you.
I do have that going for me. All those years, you know, it came across on radio, Chris, when you did it, that you absolutely loved doing your job.
Oh, I never felt I worked a day in my life when I was in radio. Never. And I mean, there were some long days and long hours, and being program director, there was some work involved, but it just never seemed like work to me. I could put in 12 hours a day and no problem. I could also put in 3 a day, and that'd be no problem either, but.
Yeah, I was going to say. And you know, those were the days where the radio announcers, disc jockeys, whatever you want to call them, it was a lot of work. You know, you had carts and sync your music, and nowadays I do a radio program in Lebanon for Radio Mom. It's all tracking. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so easy. It's pathetic.
Well, it takes a little bit of the hands off. You know, when it was tough getting used to carted music when it was convenient, but you lost that hands-on queuing up the record and timing its release so that it was right up against your vocal and that sort of thing. Carted music became wonderful, but it lost a little bit of that hands-on thing.
And you know, the problem, I don't, it's not really a problem, but Cheryl will ask me, so what do you think of this song? And I'll tell her, I said, well, when I go in and do our shows, I don't hear it. You know, it just says the song you're coming out of and the song you're going into. So a lot of times I'll watch MTV so I can hear some of the stuff we're playing, so maybe I can come up with a bit.
Some of the hits you're bringing.
Yeah, I'm bringing the hits, but I don't know the hits. Somebody's talking, I'm the biggest geek in North America.
Well, that's true anyway.
But the week, we do a rewind weekend format where we play the music from the 70s, 80s. And of course, most of that we know. So it's, you know, I told them, I said, we could do 7 days a week. I said, this is a hot format. But, you know, Taylor Swift, Shawn Mendes, that's what we like to play.
Well, it's hard to keep up. I mean,
yeah. What did you like to listen to when you were hot on radio and on WNAP?
In the early years, the harder the better, the louder the better, the more absurdly crazy the records that your mom and dad and everyone was saying, what is wrong with you? And that was that's all I needed to hear, and I knew I'd hit the sweet spot. But I've gone through the gamut. I've had the opportunity to do country western country western, country rock. I've been able to program and format some stations. Bill, also working with Bill, we did a number of different formats. but I enjoyed every music genre there was, and to the point of now, right now, I'm so involved with the 40s music. I just can't tell you. I'm into the arrangements. I'm into all of it. The vocals, the way they mix their music. It's a phenomenal era of music for me right now. I just can't get enough of it.
So what artists would those be, Chris?
Yeah, what's
Benny Goodman? You know, we're talking the Andrews Sisters. We're talking Frank Sinatra.
Well, then you've got Shelley's. You're right up Shelley's
Mills
alley.
Mills Brothers. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's Shelley Leibowitz.
I've been looking at the website, and gosh, he's got a wonderful array of talent.
My goodness.
There's some great stuff.
You talk about Frank and Sammy, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you run around with those guys, and as we mentioned, he's a tour manager for the Rolling Stones for the Steel Wheel Tour.
Sure. And you know, the war songs, the songs that were created during the war to raise the spirit of the soldiers or to get young men to enter into the service of their country, it was quite a fantastic era of music. I can't tell you, I'm just crazy about it.
Well, we were one night I was talking to Shelley and we were, and I said, man, I says, bands like Benny Goodman and these other groups, I says, the recordings just didn't do them justice versus the live performance in the theater. He says, you wouldn't believe.
Talk about Wall of Sound.
I can imagine. My goodness. And they were big bands. There were a lot of people traveling around in those little Greyhound buses all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. He talked about, he produced a lot of Frank Sinatra's records, and he talked about they set up, they wanted to use a full orchestra, so they got a full orchestra in this theater. And I don't know the song that they were going to record that day, but Frank, of course, he's Frank. He was late. He was running behind. And he walked out there. He laid him up a cigarette and poured him a scotch or whatever he drank. Took a sip off of it, looked over at Shelley and said, okay, let's do it. One take. That was it. Walked out. Over.
Did the song.
It was finished. One take, he was out of there. So.
back then, all the bands covered each other's hits. You really got a lot of different music going on there. I mean, it was different arrangements.
That's what it would take to put it together, you know, to put all the other music together, orchestra together, and then have him come in and go, one take, that's it. And these people are probably thinking, but what? What?
Right.
I planned on most of the day. But, that's a credible website. Well, now, what year would Mel Torme be, Chris? Is that the 50s?
Oh, you're referring to the Velvet Fog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would have been 50s, Mel Torme. Yeah.
Well, he's got a little Mel Torme on that list because he's got the world on a string.
I got the world on a string, sitting on a rainbow. Got the string around my finger. What a world, what a life. I'm in love. I got a song that I sing. I can make the rain go anytime I move my finger. Lucky me, can't you see? I'm in love. Life is a beautiful thing, as long as I hold the string. I'd be a silly so-and-so if I should ever let go.
got the world on a string, sitting on a rainbow. Got the string around my finger. What a world, what a life. I'm in love. Life is a beautiful thing, as long as I hold the string. I'd be a crazy so-and-so if I should ever let go. I have got the world on a string, sitting on a rainbow. Got the string around my finger. What a world. Look at that beautiful girl. What a wonderful life. I'm in love.
Hi, everyone. This is Shelley Leibowitz, and you're listening to my friends Cheryl and Larry Batson on Animal Tracks here on Blog Talk Radio.
Mel Torme on a Wednesday night, talking and chatting with Chris Connor. Man, this is fantastic. I love those old tunes, Chris.
Oh, they're just, you think, it's a whole different deal. It is. And every different sort of music there is of its own right, outstanding. And they often wonder about, what if the aliens, or they come down and they land and they go, wait a minute, what is this music? What is this? These people, they listen to it, they sing, they dance. What is going on with these people?
Well, I'm so thankful to grow up when we did. Just think now with the social media and internet, how big would the Beatles have been if they would have come out tomorrow? I mean, and
unimaginable, really.
Yeah. Well, I can remember we used to go to, well, in those days, Tops or Kmart and look at the albums and go, oh, there's a new Beatle album. Didn't even know it was out. Didn't even know it was coming out. And because I guess there was Tops, yeah, no, her was Zayers. Go to Zayers. And then they had a place called Lyric Record Store. And if you remember, you had to walk up the counter and buy your 45 over the counter.
Sure. Lyric Records. My, my, my. Mm-hmm. Wow. And in the 70s, Larry, there was so much rock music exploded, the whole music genre. I mean, all of a sudden, there was so much vinyl being produced. And all of the radio stations, these record reps would haul their records around and try and get you to play their record. And if you did, you would get a case of albums sent to your house to do with as you wish. Not payola, but they were so happy to get their music on, they would just do anything. Just do anything. And there were, now, let's go back a step here. Yeah, there was payola. A lot of people were getting a lot in trade, either through station buys or through personal things with the jocks or the program directors. But there was, I had, when I moved from Indianapolis to Fishers, I had a music library in my house of 30,000 albums.
Oh my goodness gracious!
And I'll tell you what, it was. I paid a high school kid to come in every week and make sure that all of my albums were alphabetized. And I probably got 90 to 100 new album releases every week.
Oh, man.
Every week. So there was so much music being produced that never got played. It's incredible. There's rock music out there today that you'll stumble on an album and you go, holy cow, why wasn't this a hit? why wasn't this huge?
Do you still have, the album?
No, Cheryl. It was a matter of 30,000 albums. Can you imagine how much vinyl that was, or what that would have weighed?
Well, no, and just keeping them so they wouldn't go bad.
I dissolved them. I mean, dissolved them, meaning I got rid of them because I couldn't haul them around. I couldn't.
Okay.
I had to have a library so huge. My library was bigger than the station's. Yeah.
Cool.
It was crazy. Crazy times.
And now vinyls come back. People want to hear the vinyl records. And it's like, you have a small fortune there.
Don't
all
tell me that.
All of the music today, Larry, there's no quality to it because it's all compressed beyond belief. And the vinyl, that's where all the quality was in the sound, was in vinyl, and it still is. You put a vinyl record on a good stereo system, you can't believe it. The difference between that and a disc, or a computer file, because everything's so compressed, it's the highs and lows are gone.
Yeah. Well, I can remember, not to keep going back to the Beatles, but when those first CDs come out, they didn't sound great.
No.
And we heard the vinyl records. I mean, it was completely different. It was like we talked earlier, it was a wall of sound. And you didn't hear every note. You didn't hear, but that was all part of it. But when you heard the CDs, you realized, well, George Harrison was an okay guitar player, but he wasn't a great guitar player because you could hear all the parts like you could never hear them before. But, you know, they were the Beatles, so what can you say?
Well, they were pretty good for the period. Sure were.
I would have went on vacation with one of them for sure.
If y'all were you, I wouldn't have missed that day.
Oh God! Still, our touch. We have a friend who was a waitress at the Cove. Remember that bar there on 16th Street?
Sure do.
Some of the 500,
And she served the Beatles there.
Everyone went there.
Rolling Stones went there.
Yeah.
That's right.
We went to the 500 at the racetrack. We went and saw them there. And we parked at her house, and I laughed at her. And I said to her, oh, you're the only one of our bunch that's actually met who we're going to see. And she said, she laughed at us because she said, I heard it great my driveway. Didn't she?
Yeah. The concert at the track for the Rolling Stones. What an event that was.
That was cool.
That was. I was not there, but I know that it was. My gosh.
Oh, we had to go. I grew up two blocks away from the 500, so to see the Stones at the racetrack for me was like, hello, I'm there.
It was pretty awesome. What a crowd of people. And Doug Bowles, gentleman that runs the track now, I saw him a couple times when we've gone down to do Channel 8. We talked, and I said, what a great time it was. He says, who else should we get back? What do you think?
Who do you have? Who could you?
I said, man. I said, that's you two, or
still.
That would be fantastic. But the Stones would be hard to beat. We're talking to Chris Connor on Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the SRI Label Group. You love you some Dionne Warwick, Chris?
Well, I can do Dionne a few of her songs. Yeah, she was good. I never got to play much of her.
Yeah.
If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time we meet, walk on by. Time I see you, I'll break down and cry. you gave me when you said goodbye.
Chris Connor, what's your day like now? What hobbies and things are you getting into?
Well, I've been into photography for since about 1970. And so I've always been involved in doing photography. I went after I left Bill in the radio business, I went and got an art degree, art and design, and so I just mess around.
We love our artsy friends.
Did have a job, but I just mess around.
We like messing around.
So
I'm not trusting with a lot of important things anymore.
So what kind of stuff? What kind of medium do you work in?
I deal a lot in Photoshop and Illustrator for digital and computer design. I went to art school because I wanted to find out if I could actually do things with my hands. If I could draw. If I could master that, and I found out that I could. I found out that I was pretty good. And that was just one thing that I enjoyed achieving. Control of the hand. So, I've got hands.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of which, so do you, my friend. Your stuff is amazing.
He's annoying because he doesn't. That's ridiculous, isn't it? I can't draw a straight line with a square.
Honey, you know, I couldn't either, but they teach you you got to keep moving the pencil on the paper and you get better and better and better. But Larry, your stuff is excellent.
Well, thank you. We're trained artists. It's a good way to kill time, and plus, it's not.
Idle hands are the devil's workshop.
That is so true with me because you give me nothing to do, and there's a big problem going to happen. It's like, But as long as Cheryl keeps writing these children's books, and she puts me to the grindstone, I keep doing illustrations for them. And, you know, that's self-publishing. Now, that may be something you may think about sometime, Chris, because that's a very profitable little deal if you've got a way to market it.
Well, marketing is everything, Larry. I mean, that's the whole deal. That's what makes the world go around is marketing. And you've marketed yourself very well. and your reputation is
we're
great.
Blessed with children. No, that's our thing.
Yeah, the school, the kids. When, if you got kids behind you, oh,
did it.
It's all good. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And animals and kids, man, what a great platform.
We've done it so long, and also make us feel old, is now I have school principals that remember me from when they were in elementary school.
Oh,
and I
want to
slap them. I said, come here, I'm going to slap you.
No, we appreciate them because they're having
fun. It's a blessing, so it's...
He used to say when I started helping him, he used to say, I wonder if they remember us when they get home. Because by the time we get back and we do our thing, those children at home had their lunch dinners and done their homework. And, you know, he's always thought, did they remember us? And now he has people come up and say, I remember you when I was a kid, you know, and they're grown ups or grandparents by now, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what I like is when you go in to a bank and you are looking for a loan to buy a new house or something, and you and the bank president are sitting across from the desk and you're talking and blah, 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 and what did you do? And I said, well, you know, I was in broadcasting for 40 years. And I said, well, you know, you may remember me. My name was Chris Connor. And he goes, Chris Connor, I grew up listening to you. And I'm saying, here I am. I'm sitting on the other side of this seat looking at a guy who's now the banker, and I'm going, where did I go wrong?
Wait a minute.
And,
you lost us going into a bank for a loan, so.
Yeah. They go, why would you want a loan?
You want what to be what?
Did you hear the story about the fellow from India that walks in? This is an absolutely true story. Stop me if you've heard it, but he goes into a bank in New York City to see about a loan, and he walks up and they said, well, you need to see the bank manager. The manager comes in, and he sits down. He says, what are you, kind of loan are you looking for? He said, well, I'm looking for $5,000. He said, well, what do you want to do? 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years? No, he says, I'd really rather do about 2 weeks. And he said, well, that's quite unusual for our bank. What kind of collateral did you have in mind? He says, well, there's a brand new Ferrari that's parked in front of your bank right now. Here's the keys. Here's the title. How about that?
Okay.
And he said, well, yeah, we can do that. No problem. So they do the paperwork. He gets his money. He leaves. He said, I'll see you in a couple weeks. So he comes back to the bank and walks in and takes his paperwork up to the teller prepared to repay the loan. And the teller looks over the paperwork and she says, sir, she says, we've been all told that when you come back in, you're to see the bank manager. And if you'll take a seat in his office, he'll be right with you. So he goes in, sits in his office. The manager comes in and says, we did some checking on you. He says, yeah. He said, we found out that you are a multimillionaire. Okay. So our question for you is, why in the world would you need to borrow $5,000 from this bank? And he said, what's the interest going to be on that loan? He says, well, it's like about 50 some, almost $60. He says, okay, you tell me where I could park a brand new Ferrari for 2 weeks in New York City for $60.
That's why he's a bazillionaire.
That's right.
That's why he's got our money.
We have none.
Oh, boy.
Chris, gosh, it's been wonderful to have you. The time just flew by. Thank you so much for your
support. We hope it did for you as well.
Yeah, we hope so.
It was, Larry and Cheryl, a wonderful time. And keep up the good work. I enjoy your Facebook page and everything that you post. And you do marvelous work. God bless you.
Well, God bless you. And like you said, you raised us up on radio, that's for sure. WNAP, and it was fantastic those years. I'd sit up in my bedroom and call Chris Connor on the request line. He'd go, oh, it's that dang kid. I can't leave me alone.
You are a pet, you know.
I am a pet. We're going to close out.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. We're going to close out on Blog Talk Radio tonight from the SRI Label Group. Hey, Mitch Ryder and his Detroit Wheels on a Wednesday night on Blog Talk.